All right, good morning, everybody. Monday morning, October 11th, 11:17 now. We're just getting started with the organic lecture. People are coming back into class. And I was going to just look real quick at where we left off. So we're all on the same page. Right, and I was recharging things. So that means I need to get that coupler out of there. It doesn't like the recharging coupler in between. Now it should go. Okay. This is where we left off on Thursday. We were talking about alcohols. We did some nomenclature. We did some classification. We talked about some physical properties. We talked about acidity, reagents for deprotonation. We talked about synthesis and different ways to synthesize alcohols. And then we were talking about this new way of reduction and looking at reducing agents. And so we talked about different sorts of reducing agents, whether they be hydrogenation or whatever we were looking at, hydride reagents. And we talked about sodium borohydride and lithium aluminum hydride and the differences thereof, different ones being strong and weak. And we looked at reduction of esters in order to produce alcohols. And I think that was about where we left off, was looking at the ability to reduce different functional groups, including esters. So let me see if I can catch up to where we're at in the notes. I think that's actually where I left off here. It is. Okay, so now I know what I need to do. All right, let's start a new note and pick it up from there. So this is synthesis of alcohols by reduction. And I'm gonna just take one more minute and reorganize my screens here so that I can see the chat and see you guys and all my stuff at the same time. All right, good. All right, we're looking at synthesis of alcohols by reduction. I had this funny experience last Friday. This is just reminding me of it, that when I'm teaching, I actually look at the screen a lot to make sure that the screen is representing what I'm drawing in case it drops off for some reason. And so I'm fairly cognizant of the way things look on the screen to see what you guys are seeing and what I'm seeing. And I took a class for chemical hygiene officers that was like a 6-hour class last Friday, where I wasn't teaching, I was in the class. And so I'm taking notes, and I'm taking notes on my iPad the way that I would normally do. And I keep looking up at the screen to see my notes on the screen. And the notes were not showing up on the screen because all I was seeing was the presenter's notes. And it was just freaking me out for hours. It was like the entire time, because I keep thinking, why aren't my notes on the screen? They're supposed to be there. I'm sitting there, I'm drawing, and nothing's happening. It's very disturbing. Okay, so the idea here is that we can reduce different types of carbonyl compounds in order to get alcohols. And what we can do is we can look at the reduction of aldehydes and just give you some options here, that the aldehydes can be reduced by sodium borohydride, or they could be reduced by lithium aluminum hydride. However, when you do lithium aluminum hydride, you need to have two steps, and you always need to add back in the dilute acid. This produces an alcohol where the hydride that is added in is that second proton. And so that guy comes in as the hydride, and the this I'll do it in that color. This guy, the acid, is to protonate the alcohol that's there. We can do the same thing with ketones. And ketones can be reduced by either sodium borohydride or by lithium aluminum hydride. And that this produces different types of alcohols. You're looking at a primary alcohol in the first case. And so aldehydes, when reduced, go to primary alcohols. Ketones, when reduced, go to secondary alcohols. And once again, the acid shows up as the proton connected to the oxygen. And the hydride is transferred to the carbon. The other idea that we looked at is that there are other types of carbonyl compounds, two specifically, that are important to look at. One of them is the ester. And that esters can be reduced by lithium aluminum hydride. They cannot be reduced by sodium borohydride. And when these are reduced, they generally produce a primary alcohol. And you also get whatever alcohol this end was, which could be primary, secondary, or tertiary. You wind up getting both. And the acid is doing the exact same job. The acid is there to protonate the oxygens, and the hydride was used to add these hydrogens. And so what winds up happening is it winds up splitting this bond here into the two fragments. So that's lithium aluminum hydride that can do that. So we're going to draw a distinction here between what sodium borohydride can do and the reduction of the aldehydes and ketones, and what things that only lithium aluminum hydride can do. And then the one other molecule that we look at that is important is carboxylic acids. And carboxylic acids are important because they already have an acidic proton. So with that acidic proton, they react different ways with the two different reagents. When you attempt to reduce this with sodium sodium borohydride, what you get is an acid-base reaction. The borohydride takes the proton. And the electrons here go back to the oxygen, and it produces the carboxylate and the sodium becomes the counter ion for it. And the hydrogen goes off as hydrogen gas. And so we get an acid-base reaction. The lithium aluminum hydride does the same thing, but the lithium aluminum hydride is then capable of reducing the resulting carboxylate. And so what happens here is initially this gets converted to the carboxylate, and then that carboxylate with more lithium aluminum hydride is actually reduced down to the primary alcohol. And it is able to fully reduce it. So sodium borohydride just is not strong enough to be able to reduce that carboxylate. And so it stops at the acid-base reaction. This one undergoes the acid-base reaction producing the carboxylate, but then that can be further reduced down to the alcohol because lithium aluminum hydride is so strong that it can react with that carboxylate as well, and it can reduce it down. So what we find is that all of these carbonyl compounds can be reduced, just depends upon what reducing agent you use to reduce them. Aldehydes and ketones can be reduced by both of the reagents. Esters can be reduced only by lithium aluminum hydride, and carboxylic acids can be reduced only by lithium aluminum hydride. But what we need to be careful of is we need to be careful of this one, because this one undergoes the acid-base reaction. And sometimes we miss that. Sometimes we make a mistake with that one. And so we need to watch that one. And that can happen. And so as we start looking at these reducing agents, the mechanism here of the reduction of the esters becomes important because it's a little bit more complicated than the aldehydes and ketones. So let's look at the mechanisms of each one of these real quick and just see kind of what happens. Let's say aldehyde and ketone. With the aldehyde and ketones, when they get reduced, either the boron or the aluminum, the reaction is the same. It's a transfer of a hydride, of an H minus. So we get partial minus at the hydride, we get partial minus at the oxygen, and partial positive at the carbonyl base. The boron has a negative charge, and to alleviate that negative charge, it lets go of the hydride, which makes a new hydrogen carbon bond. And so the reaction mechanism is actually really simple. It's just a transfer of the H minus, giving me the O minus at the top, and the boron then goes into being a trigonal planar species. And every single one of the hydrogens can be transferred, because what happens is, that is not the best orbitals I've ever drawn. Do better than that. Because the empty p orbital that's here, the negative charge binds that negative p orbital, binds to that empty p orbital, and makes another 8 complex. Now the boron is negatively charged again, and because the boron is negatively charged again, it can transfer another hydride to another aldehyde, and this can keep going. So that goes until all of the ketones or aldehydes are reduced. And we wind up with the alcohol. And the boron is essentially exhausted. And so what you've got is you've got four equivalents of hydride, meaning that that sodium borohydride can reduce four equivalents of alcohol, or it can reduce four equivalents of aldehyde or ketone to produce alcohol. With the ester, it's a little bit different. With the ester, it's not just a simple transfer. Here what happens, and this needs to be the lithium aluminum hydride now, it initially looks like the same thing. We have the 8 complex. And sometimes we say this, but people don't understand what that actually means. Eight complex. This is a carboxyl 8. Sulfate. Nitrate, these eight complexes, these ideas of eight really equals anion. And so when an aluminum or a boron has four things attached to it, we give it the name of a eight complex, meaning that it has a negative charge to it. So it's just a vocabulary idea or vocabulary concept. The same thing is happening here in that the oxygen is partial minus, the carbonyl is partial positive, and the hydride transfers to the carbon, breaking the carbonyl bond, moving the electrons up onto the carbonyl oxygen. Once that occurs, we have this carbon that has two oxygens connected to it. One of those oxygens can function as a leaving group and allows the negative charge to push back in and push that leaving group out, regenerating the carbonyl. This makes an aldehyde. And an alkoxide. The aldehyde is more reactive, substantially more reactive, thousands of times more reactive than the ester. And so what happens here is the same thing that happened before with the boron. The aluminum winds up combining with the oxygen that just got kicked out, forming back the 8 complex. And the hydrides can continue to transfer to carry on the reduction. so that all four of the hydrogens that were attached to the aluminum can also transfer. So we wind up making these two guys that are alkoxide ions. And then that, with the dilute acid, winds up getting protonated. That's where we get the primary alcohol. And then depending upon what was attached as the alcohol to the ester, this part could be primary, secondary, or tertiary. And it just depends on what type of alcohol was attached to the ester. So now here's the interesting part. Much like epoxides, where epoxides, when the leaving group leaves on an epoxide, it's still attached on one side, right? So when the leaving group as an epoxide leaves, it never really goes anywhere. It's just attached to another carbon and it's still part of the molecule. Esters, if we think about an ester as a lactone, a lactone is a cyclic ester. We give them a new name. We don't just call them an ester. We call it a lactone. So this could be some sort of ring system. And if I go through and I reduce this with lithium aluminum hydride, LAH, and two dilute acid, it does exactly what we think it would do. It would go through and produce the primary alcohol, and it would produce the R group. But in this case, if I think about this as a chain that is connecting these ends, then that chain connects these two ends. And what I end up with is I end up with a diol. So the diol that I would specifically end up with, if I'm careful about how I draw it, there's the two hydrides that got transferred. So the hydride is there. And the acidic proton is attached to the alcohols. And so this becomes a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is a 1, 5 diol. And we could draw that 2, 3, 4, 5. One, two, three, four, five. So this would be an equivalent way to draw it. So because cyclic esters are attached still, the two ends of the ester are still attached when you go through and do the reduction. So that gives us all kinds of options. For instance, try this one. Take the ester. And reduce it with lithium aluminum hydride. See what you get. So the easiest way to do these is to go ahead and to break the two bonds and then to turn them both into alcohols, but leave the rest of the connection intact. So there's everything else that was intact. And then just to protonate the two oxygens. And there's the result. If you want to, you can certainly straighten out the molecule. And the best thing to do is always to number them. 1, 2, 3, 4 carbon chain. 1, 2, 3, 4 carbon chain. I've got the two methyls that are on carbon number 4. And number 4 also has the hydroxyl group. So just the system for keeping everything straight so that we don't get it all lost or turned around. So then different ways of making diols. We can make diols in all different sorts of ways. And we had a number of different reactions which are review reactions for us for diols. So I want to show some of those review reactions first. And then we'll go into some of the new ways that we've got here to make diols. Okay, so some of the review reactions. These are older reactions. One of the ways that we had was to work from an alkene and to do osmium tetraoxide. This is with NMO. And then there's, I think, hydrogen sulfide. Sodium sulfide, that's what it is, not hydrogen sulfide, sodium sulfide, Na2SO3. This took and did a syn addition and so this makes a 1,2 diol. Is the limitation. It can only make 1,2 diols. We had another way of making diols. We could go through and number one, we can use MCPBA. That makes the epoxide. And then we could treat that epoxide with sodium hydroxide. Or you could use acid and water. So we could open it either way. And this did an anti-addition. And made a 1,2 diol. All right, so now what we've got is we've got some new ways to make diols. So those are the two ways that we had before. Those just made the 1,2 diols, either syn or anti-addition. Now the new way is to be able to take and to create aldehydes or ketones. So let's do number one, ozonolysis. And number two, let's do a reductive workup, zinc and water. And that's going to create aldehydes. Let's make sure that we get the carbons right. Number one, two, three, four, and five. Two, three, four, and five. And then from here, we reduce this with sodium borohydride. One, let's do that in red. One, two, three, four, and five. This is a 1-5 dial. But we could create sort of any size dial that we want there just by modifying the size of the ring system that we're working on. We could also take any carbonyl compound, whether they be aldehydes or ketones, with any number of CH2 groups, and we could react this with sodium borohydride and methanol, and we can reduce it down to the alcohol with any repeat number that we want there. So we can make 1-2 diol or 1-3 or any number that we really want. Depending upon how big that end group is, whether or not I have 3, 4, 5, 6 repeat units, whatever the repeat units are. And I can create different size dials. And then an additional way is to have an end group there and to use 1 lithium aluminum hydride and 2 dilute acid. I should be clear that sometimes I do write out lithium aluminum hydride, and I write it fully out rather than just writing LAH, so that you can recognize it both ways. And what this does is similarly reduce this down to a diol where I have a repeat unit there, where this could be 1-3 or 1-4 or any sort of number that I want there, depending upon how many end groups there are in the ring system. And so I've got a number of different ways to produce diols, depending upon what sort of diol I need, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, or even bigger. And I can produce them in different sort of orientations. I can produce them syn-additions and anti-additions based on ways that I had before. And if that wasn't enough, we've got some more words. Use of organometallics. So organometallics are MgBr. We're talking about Grignards. There are other organometallics too, but Grignards are really the primary thing that we look at here. We could take a carbonyl compound and we can react it with a Grignard. And it works much the same way that a hydride does. Because of the negative charge on the alkyl group, that negative charge acts as a nucleophile, attacking the carbonyl base, making a new bond with the partially positively charged carbonyl carbon. We do this in two steps. One, the Grignard. Two, dilute acid. We always need that dilute acid as a secondary step to protonate. And what that does is it brings in the R group and makes an alcohol. So if I look at that in terms of that making an alcohol in that way, I can make a number of different types of alcohols. So imagine if I start with formaldehyde. With formaldehyde, if I do a Grignard, any type of Grignard, this allows me to make a number of different structures where I add one carbon to the structure. And this becomes a primary alcohol. I can take an aldehyde and do the same thing with an aldehyde. I can react it with a Grignard. I'll distinguish between the two carbon groups by making one a regular and the other one with a prime group on it. And actually, I think what I'll do is I'll turn this around. Let's make it a little more. Traditional. This is adding multiple carbons. And what we make is we make a secondary alcohol. So this is an aldehyde. The other type of carbonyl compound that we have is a ketone. And with the ketone, let's make one of these a prime and one of these not. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and just add a bit of color, tracking the group that's been added in. So we can see the group that's being added in by the Grignard. This time what happens is that our group comes in again, we're adding multiple carbons. But this time we make a tertiary alcohol. So formaldehyde allows me to make primary alcohols. Other aldehydes allow me to make secondary alcohols. Ketones allow me to make tertiary alcohols. And I can make all these different types of alcohols stemming from this one reaction of a Grignard. And if that's not enough, I can use that Grignard with esters as well. So watch what happens when I do it with an ester. Okay, when I do it with an ester, I'll have to show you the mechanism, but it requires two equivalents. And what winds up happening is we wind up making two different molecules. The R group is there, and two of the Grignard R groups are there. This is a tertiary alcohol. And so this group found its way onto the molecule twice. And there's a second molecule that winds up being created. And this could be primary, secondary, or tertiary, depending upon what was connected to that alcohol. But Grignards allow us to make a pattern where if you look at all the other molecules that were here, one R group was added, one R group was added, one R group was added. Here, two R groups wind up being added. And so certain substitution patterns, where there's two R groups that are added from the Grignard, this is important. Because it allows us to be able to look at a molecule and decide, did it come from an aldehyde? Did it come from an ester? Did it come from a ketone? And we can look and see where that alcohol came from based on how that alcohol is constructed. And I guess the only last part of this is to be careful of this. And that is that carboxylic acids when you react them with a Grignard that the negative charge winds up grabbing the proton. And we get an acid-base reaction, and there is no substitution reaction that occurs. And that happens because of that acidic proton. And then the carboxylate is unreactive to the Grignard. So the Grignard's been destroyed and the carboxylate won't react with the Grignard. And so the reaction stops at that point.
oldies don't work with water present, right?
None of these work with water present.
Right.
You can't have any water present for any of the Grignard reactions.
That same as before. Right. Okay, cool.
That is correct. Which brings us to our next point. So that's a perfect segue into the next thing. I feel like I want to do some examples of these real quick before I jump into that next thing, though. Normally, I would just go without doing the examples, but let's do a couple of examples before we jump into something else. Let's go ahead and look at formaldehyde reacting with phenylmagnesium bromide. And then dilute acid. Basically, all you do is you look at what the R group is, regardless of how big the R group is. It attaches to the carbon. You do the one carbon addition, and then you protonate the O minus. So how we draw it is kind of up to us on this other side. Usually we would draw the aromatic ring first. We draw the new bond. Let me do that new bond in red. So there's the new bond. That then goes to the carbon and the OH. And we have the rest of the molecule in there. If I want to do the same thing with an aldehyde, maybe what I've got is a propyl aldehyde, and I bring in one and number two, dilute acid. So I find the carbon that is the negative charge, bind it to the carbon of the carbonyl base, open it up, and then go ahead and just draw that piece. Draw the new bond, and then draw in the piece that was added. And if you need to, go back and number your carbons. 1, 2, and 3. And if you want to, you can do 1' and 2'. This would be 1, 2, and 3 for the existing carbons. 1' for the connection. 2' for the alkene, so we can see how things were connected. If I want to come in and I want to work on a ketone, this is acetophenone. And maybe I'm reacting acetophenone with, let's choose a Grignard that's got several carbons on it. Draw the existing carbons. And then you've got the new bond. And then you've got to make sure that you get the number of carbons correct. I'm going to choose to make those all prime groups. So that's 4 carbons. So that would be connected to carbon number 1, 2, 3, and 4. So this would be 1', 2', 3', and 4'. And then I got to get my aromatic ring back. And maybe I would go through and number these, number one, two, and three to the ring, one, two, and three, the carbon of the ring. Is this all looking okay so far? Okay, and then perhaps what we've got is an ester. And maybe with that ester, I go back to phenyl magnesium bromide. Two equivalents, and then dilute acid. And what I would create is, in this case, when I number the carbons, this is carbon number one and carbon number two. And I'm going to be breaking both this bond and one of those bonds, and I'm going to get two of the aromatic groups attached. And then on the other side, I'm going to end up with methanol. So this was carbon number one, carbon number two, and then the two aromatic rings that have attached to that. And so one more idea here is to think about, what if I asked you to make a molecule? Maybe what I did is I asked you to make this molecule. So make, what is that? 1,1 diphenyl ethanol. Is that benzyl? It's not benzyl. It's not a benzyl group. It's a phenyl group. 1,1 diphenyl ethanol from anything. And how could you make it? And we could come up with a number of creative ways to be able to make this molecule. So I just showed one way above, right? So we can make it from the ester. So one way is to key into that and to see that these two groups are the same. And I could use the ester reaction. And I could use any R group there, it doesn't matter. But I could use two equivalents of the Grignard. And then dilute acid, and that would make that molecule. So that's one way. Can you give me another way? Can you think of another way that we might be able to make that molecule? From the reactions that we did up here. try taking just one R group off and think about if you took one R group off and you were only going to add in one R group, what the molecule would have looked like that one R group would be added to.
Back in the first example that you gave us, there's at that position where the hydroxyl connects, we could potentially add another a phenyl, and then we would need to add a methanol too, though.
You've got a methyl there.
Okay,
so let me draw that for you. That is exactly right. So what you could do is you could take and have an aromatic group there and a methyl, and then this could be one equivalent of the Grignard. And then two dilute acid. And that will make the same molecule. There's another way yet. What if we didn't take off an aromatic ring? What if we took off the methyl group? And so another way that we could do this is by taking off the methyl group and leaving the two aromatic ring systems on there, and come in with the methyl group as the Grignard. And then dilute acid. See, so what we've done is we took a look at the ring system being the group that we added, and we added two of them because we had two equivalents that we added in to the ester. Then we looked at, well, what if we just added in one of these and we had an appropriate starting material so that that starting material was the methyl and the benzene ring, that's the acetophenone one, right? And then we looked at, well, what if we just take and we add in the CH3 group here, that's the CH3 group that we wind up adding in, and that winds up adding into the acetophenone or the benzophenone. And so there's three different ways that we could wind up making this molecule from three different starting points. We can make the same molecule with very similar reactions, all using organometallics to make this alcohol in different ways. So the idea here is that when you see two groups that are the same group on a tertiary alcohol, think ester and Grignard. Another way is you could see it as just adding in one group, which would be starting from an appropriate aldehyde. Or you could see it as starting from a symmetrical aldehyde and adding in the odd group. And all of those ways are viable ways to go back and make that molecule. All right, so it gives us a lot of flexibility. In some ways, that's really nice. Having that flexibility is nice. In some ways, it's harder because you go, oh, wait, I got so many choices. I don't know what to do. All these choices are just making me befuddled in terms of which direction is the right direction. And the answer is all three are the right direction.
I guess it depends what you have in the stock room.
That's right. It's what's available to you. It's what you get to start from. That's the cool thing, is that there's multiple ways to do this. There's multiple ways to achieve the goal. And it just depends on what you happen to have in hand.
Now, from a human point of view, they're all about the same, right?
They are. They're all identical. There's none of these that are more difficult than the other. They're all equally viable. They're all equally viable. Okay, so this other idea that I wanted to talk about is a problem or an issue. This is what I was alluding to before. That if you want to make a grignard, and there happens to be an alcohol in the molecule, what it goes to is it goes to OMG and the bromide is sitting here, and the proton is now attached. Basically, what winds up happening is the anion that's generated here winds up taking the proton. And you can't make a grignard or use a grignard in the presence of an acidic proton. It leads to an acid-base reaction. And so we need to come up with a strategy that allows us to be able to deal with that, because it comes up a lot. And this is the first place where it's really come up, has come up. And we need to find ways to be able to deal with this. So the way that we deal with this is what's called protecting groups. So we use a protecting group strategy. Basically, a protecting group is a group that is chemically inert to the conditions you desire to use. We say this is chemically inert to the conditions or to the desired conditions. Ideally, you put it on in a high yielding reaction and you remove it in a high yielding reaction. Hopefully that we're looking for something that is greater than 90% in terms of being able to put it on and being able to take it off. That's what we're sort of looking at. And so the idea here would be to go through and to take the molecule that we desire to modify. We put a protecting group on it. We then make the grignard and use it for whatever it is that we want to do. The protecting group is inert to the grignard. We then react it with some molecule, whatever it is that molecule is, number one, and then two, dilute acid. And then we remove the protecting group. And the protecting group comes off smoothly. That's the idea. And this is the first style of protecting groups for alcohols that we look at. But we will find as we go forward that there are protecting groups for aldehydes, there are protecting groups for ketones, there are protecting groups for carboxylic acids. There's even protecting groups for alkenes and alkynes. They all have their own style of protecting groups, chemical reactions that produce a functional group that makes it inert to certain conditions. And then we can remove that protecting group at the time of our choosing. So there are many, there are books on protecting groups. And in fact, I'm looking at green protective groups in organic synthesis, which is just a massive book. And this is a book that is nothing. I don't know if you can see me on a small screen. I've still got the screen share up, but this is Protecting Groups in Organic Synthesis by Green and Watts. And it's just a massive book. You can see how thick that book is in terms of protecting groups. And there are thousands of protecting groups. There are probably, just for alcohols alone, there's probably over 100 protecting groups for alcohols, of which we're going to look at a couple of them. I think we're going to look at like three classes of them to do some different things. But let's start off with the first one, and I'll show you what the first one looks like and where we go with this. So the first one is trimethyl silyl ethers. So these are protecting groups for alcohols. And like I said, there's a number of different types and styles. So type, this is a silyl ether. So the first type is silyl ether. And the first protecting group that we'll look at is called TMS. Now I showed this to you earlier in the lecture. We talked about the TMS group. And the TMS group is trimethyl silyl group. It's a silicon, which is bound to three methyl groups. And it attaches at the oxygen in that position. So how we put them on, the way that we put it on, we take our alcohol and we react our alcohol with TMSCl. We do this with a base that is a fairly non-nucleophilic base, triethylamine. It's an SN2 reaction. Silicon is really big. So even though this looks like it's a tertiary chloride, because the silicon is period three, it's massive. And it's essentially just an SN2 reaction that kicks out that chloride and makes R, O, and then we write in the TMS. Now, oftentimes we don't do the dash, we just write ROTMS. But what that equals is that equals the RO silicon with the three methyl groups on it. And that is the protecting group. And so we call it just a TMS group. Question is, how do we get that TMS group back off? Now the TMS group is sitting on there instead of the proton. How do we remove that TMS group? So here's how we take it off. It's removed with a reagent called TBATH, tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride. I'm going to do it visually so that we can see. We write TBATH and then 2 dilute acid. Okay, so TBATH stands for tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride. And what it is a source of fluoride, and silicon and fluorine have an extraordinarily strong chemical bond. Silicon is very fluorine-philic. It loves to bond to fluorine. And so essentially what this is a reverse SN2, where silicon and oxygen make a great strong bond. So this goes together really easily, but what silicon likes more than oxygen is fluorine. And so because the silicon-fluorine bond is stronger than the silicon-oxygen bond, this comes in and does another SN2 and bumps it right back out. And the reason that we use that great big tetrabutyl ammonium ion is to make the fluoride soluble in organic solvents. And so all of those alkyl groups make this thing more alkyl-like, make it less polar, make it less ionic, drags it into solution, and then the fluorine can react with the silicon. And so it does an SN2 reaction, and it just reboots it right back out. And I get my alcohol back. And what I end up with is this needs to be isolated out of solution. The silicon winds up with the fluorine, and the tetrabutyl ammonium is precipitated out when I add in dilute acid. So I add in dilute acid, I'm adding in something like HCl. And so the other part of this is that the TBATH, the tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride ion, is precipitating out with the chloride. And I'm just filtering that out of solution. And that forms a solid that precipitates out. So that's how I take it off, TBATH and dilute acid. So it's really pretty easy to use. And so what I can do now is I can say, well, let's do a synthesis. Let's show it real quick. Let's say that I want to convert this into that diol. And if I track in my carbons and look at how many carbons I've got, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is 1, 2, 3, and 4. So this looks like it's a new bond. And it looks like that guy there is 1' and is a new carbon. So ideally, this is set up for a Grignard. But in order to do the Grignard, I'm going to have to do the protecting group. So what I would like to do is I would like to take this back to perhaps doing MGBR, and it's a 1 carbon, so maybe formaldehyde, and I have the alcohol on there, and then that could go directly back to the bromide there. The only problem here is this Grignard and that proton, and that those two are incompatible. And so what that means is, that means I need to use a protecting group strategy. So what I'll do is I'll go back and I'll resequence it and I'll do the protecting group first. So I take the alcohol and I react it with TMSCL. I do that with triethylamine. The base is important because otherwise the reaction doesn't go, the reaction will shut down. That goes ahead and puts the TMS group. Then I can react it one with magnesium, two with formaldehyde, and three, I can throw in the dilute acid. That adds in my one carbon. And then the last thing I need to do is get rid of that TMS group. So I do one TBATH, tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride, and two, dilute acid deprotonated. And that removes the protecting group. And so it added two steps. But what I'm hoping is that in adding those two steps, that they are added in extremely high yield. And that they allow for the putting on of that protecting group and the taking off of that protecting group. And that's where the sequencing comes in, because after I do the retrosynthesis, I need to think about where that protecting group needs to go on and where it needs to come off. All right, so when we come back on Wednesday, we'll look a little bit more at these protecting groups. I've got a number of other protecting groups that are very similar. I have more of the silyl ethers. I've got a couple of other types of protecting groups to look at, good for different things. Some of them are protective for acids. Some of them are protective for bases. Some of them are protective for different situations. So there's different places where I want to use different protecting groups. And sometimes I want to put different protecting groups on different alcohols. So how can I use and put multiple protecting groups on, different ones on different alcohols, and I can remove them at different times, so that I can put a protecting group on one alcohol, work on the other, then put a protecting group on that, and then work on the other, and I can do different things. So lots of flexibility with these protecting groups. So lots more to look at with protecting groups. And that's where we'll pick it up on Wednesday. All right? I'm going to stop the share. That's all I've got for you today. I'm watching my time. I'm at 12:37. And I'm happy to entertain questions. I know that Brian wanted to stick around and talk to me. If anybody else wants to stick around and talk to me, you're more than welcome to. And other than that, I'll see you on Wednesday.
What should we be working on?
Yes. We were still working on those synthesis problems. And I think I've got a set of problems for alcohols. They're going to be more in the form of synthesis ones too, along with the alcohols, that are going to require protecting groups. Let me find that and I'll shoot it out to you, Travis. I'll shoot it out to everybody.
Okay.
So I'll give you a problem set, the next problem set to work on.
Cool.
Some direction.
And are we supposed to be starting on the co-op?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And I'll put all that in the email today. When I send out the email that says that the recordings are up online, I'll put direction into that email on what you should be working on too.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
You're welcome.